Welcome to Flashpoint, the podcast for filthy casuals by filthy casuals.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the pre-Christmas Flashpoint episode number 91, recorded Sunday, December 14th. I'm your host, David Holloway, and with me is a co-host who, like me, is already bloody sick of the holiday season. How are you, Scrooge?
Is it over yet?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Couldn't agree more. What is it you particularly hate? It's too long a list.
Just people. People in general. I made up a list of who's naughty and nice, and then I thought, screw it, and I've decided everyone's naughty. So I've spent the last 2 days wrapping pieces of coal in tinfoil so I can start just hurling them at people as they wassail past my window.
Nice.
Bastards.
Did you just say wassail, as in W-A-S-S-A-I-L?
Yeah.
I don't know what that word means, but I've seen it. There's another guy I know who uses that word all the time, and I've always wondered what it means.
I think traditionally it's got something to do with the collection of apples.
Oh.
Late autumn, early winter fruit.
Yeah, there you go. You get educated on this podcast, both as host and listener.
That's assuming that I'm right. I'm pretty sure it's something to do with that. And that there was singing involved, as there is with most boring manual tasks.
Yeah. You're a regular Tom Bombadil, aren't you? Singing and collecting your apples.
I hate him.
Yeah, you can see why they didn't put him in the movies. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Boring. Boring.
Yeah. All right. So this week, as I said, this is a pre-Christmas one. So this will be our last episode until probably mid-January or so. But we've still got, actually, we've got a huge amount to talk about tonight. We'll talk more Shadows of Revan, a bit more Star Wars Episode 7, a little bit of Warlords of Draenor, and a heap of other stuff. So, but as always, let's jump into Republic News.
You're not afraid? You will be.
You will be.
So, as per usual, let's check what we've been playing. Simon, what have you been into?
I have been muddling around in the SWTOR, trying to figure out which alt to use, and it's too much work. And gotten back into running around, waving a sword and. Whatnot in the Elder Scrolls Online. I thought I'd give that another try.
How's it going?
Actually, it's quite fun. Granted, I actually had to create two characters before I found one that I actually felt happy with. So, yes, the third time's the charm. So, I don't know. I'll just delete the other two alts, I think. It's just getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's a long time since I've been back in the game, and it was... It's worth checking out, I think. I'm quite enjoying it. The combat is really quite different to SWTOR and the first-person shooter, so it's quite refreshing just being able to move back and forth between different combat styles and just mix it up. Otherwise, things start to get a bit stale.
Yeah. There you go, a bit of this. And dare I ask, with SWTOR, you said mucking around with your alts, so have you started the expansion? And I don't mean this from any superiority viewpoint, because I haven't.
I haven't gotten very far into it. I was, like I say, most of the characters I've been focusing on for the last, probably going on for a year now, are all on the Harbinger. But my highest level character is still on Berrigan Colony, but I'm damned if I'm paying the transfer fee. So I was been alternating between, do I just pick an alt on the Harbinger and just work on that, and accept it's going to take a while to get myself to the point where I can get to Rishi, or do I go back to Berrigan and level up someone who's already there? So in the end, I just went back to my old warrior and we've started the quest chain, so landed on Rishi. I'm still blown away by just how big it is. I wasn't expecting. I don't know how big Yavin 4 is, but I'm guessing it's probably maybe a bit smaller, but probably comparable.
Yeah,
I would guess. I haven't gone very far. I've gotten to a point where I killed someone in a cantina, and then his brother, who I'm guessing is not a blood relation, came after me. So I've just gotten past that. I don't think I'm giving anything away there.
Okay.
Or at least not too much. So I haven't gotten far into it, but far enough into it. And I have to admit, I've done a little bit of just bumming around on the speeder, just having a look at some of the areas as well. So haven't been exactly laser focused on it. So I'm still really getting a feel of the new disciplines and how things work. And it is a bit of a shakeup, but since I wasn't a, how can I put it, competent player, it's not really too big a shock for me, because I've having all the various alts and so on, I never really picked an advanced class and stuck with it for very long. Every time I played, I'd end up going with a different character, and then of course you're sort of reacclimatizing to that advanced class. So it's always been a state of ball juggling for me. So yeah, I have to admit, unlike a lot of people who still play the game, it's not really affecting me, because I didn't have a clue what I was doing to start with.
No, I'm the same. Cool. Well, I mean, as far as what I've been playing, you might as well cut and paste in the audio from last week. Although, as some of our listeners heard last week, I'm not good at cutting and pasting in that I failed to put in one of our audio bumpers, and the first 50 people or so that downloaded the podcast got to look behind the curtain of the podcast quite nicely, if you haven't listened already. Nothing offensive there, but I failed to do a little bit of editing. But from what I've been playing, is the same as last time. It's been very much WoW with nearly zero SWTOR. And I need to emphasize, this isn't a lack of passion or interest for SWTOR. It's the fact that I don't feel the expansion in WoW has been so extensive that I don't feel like I've covered off enough of it to be able to comfortably move to SWTOR to start that. It's just the way my mind works. I want to feel like I've really nailed, if not all the content, at least a decent chunk of it. And because of the garrison stuff, I don't feel like I'm there yet. I haven't even got to one of the key zones yet, and I've been 100 now for, you know, more than 2 weeks.
So, yeah. And if you can let one sub lapse so you could pick up another game, it's more cost effective to do it that way anyway, rather than having multiple subs going. Even though there's only so many hours in the day, you can't focus on all of the games.
Too. Yeah, that's right. And I've only had a handful of hours in the week anyway for gaming. So, I'll briefly cover Warlords of Draenor news later. But yeah, that's basically all I've been playing. And I said I did have a twitchy hand to jump on the PS4 today for some Destiny, but we'll talk more about that later as well. So let's jump into SWTOR news, which there has been a bit even in the past week. Mainly, first one we'll cover is the third anniversary, which is, when's the actual dates? It's around now, isn't it?
It's started. You can get the, if you haven't already been daft enough to buy them, you can get the Coruscant and the Drummond Cass apartment for, is it three credits?
Yeah, credits.
Bad luck if you've already spent $5,000 on each of them.
Which I think I have. I'm pretty sure I bought my Coruscant. Yeah, I have, and it would have been the $5,000.
Yeah. Fortunately, I hadn't got the Coruscant one on Berrigan Colony, because I checked that today and thought, oh, well, at least I only paid $18,000. I didn't pay $20,000 for all four of them on, you know, for both of them on two servers. But it's good for the people that don't have them. And they're worth having, I think.
Yeah. And this is, I really want to avoid the WoW comparisons. I struggle with the strongholds, and I've said it on two episodes, so I won't go on too much. Just that there's no reason for me to be there. It's all cosmetic. And that's been the eye-opener with Warlords of Draenor, that there is absolutely reason. Now, to be fair, though, Blizzard is struggling, or the game is struggling with the issue that all the capital cities and a whole bunch of areas are ghost towns, because a lot of people aren't leaving their garrisons because you don't need to. So, depending on how you've leveled it up, you can do pretty much everything, including Auction House, from your garrison. So why would you go elsewhere?
Well, if you remember way, way back when Rockjaw was still community manager at SWTOR, that was one of the concerns he and I were discussing, was having too much on at the time, having too much on your ship.
Yeah.
And people just start vacating the fleet hubs.
That's right.
So it's kind of surprising that, you know, we were talking about this 3 years ago. I would have thought Blizzard would maybe have figured this out already.
Yeah, or they don't see it as a problem, and that's where it's going to be interesting in the long term. I mean, they've just had a jump above 10 million. Maybe they're going, yep, we don't care. It'll be just interesting to see how that plays out over 6 months. But I think there's got to be a balance, because for me, the strongholds, unless you've got a real decorative streak and love wandering around looking at static cosmetic content, and the third anniversary stuff emphasised that. So the three credits for the strongholds, that's cool. The fireworks launcher, if I never see another fireworks launcher in any MMO again, it'll be too soon. So maybe I'm just being a Scrooge on that.
Yeah, I've still got fireworks left over from the other two anniversaries.
Yeah, that's right. It just doesn't, you know, what?
But the GIF looks, the animated GIF they've got on the website, at least makes it look, it looks a bit more spectacular. Because the other anniversary fireworks are about as spectacular as the ones you can get in Minecraft,
yeah.
which is to say, not really.
That's right. The celebratory paintings for your stronghold, if you are into the decoration side, I can imagine there are some people slobbering for those because it's something different. So that's cool.
Yeah, 8 festive paintings. I like 8 and paintings. I'm not sure festive about the word festive.
Yeah, the two in the, again, they don't, hopefully, yeah, God. Well, one of them does look like it's got fireworks in it. So, anyway. And then holographic projection, Galactic Memorial. Invite your friends and show off a large holographic projection of the entire galaxy. Okay.
Yes, which, and you,
you can see that in your ship on any day of the week.
Exactly, yeah.
So I don't want to sound overly negative, but, and I understand an anniversary, just an anniversary, you can't expect a huge amount. And again, to compare to WoW, their 10th anniversary, I'm just trying to think, did you get anything? I don't think you got anything of particular note. So it's not to criticise BioWare specifically, it's just there's nothing that excites me there.
And you were right. I've just for the first time actually bothered to enlarge the photos on the website. Yeah, they're all got bloody fireworks going on.
All of them do. Oh, yeah. Excellent, good stuff. So that's our third anniversary. We were going to link to some further dissection of that at Dolphy.net, but we've both just discovered tonight, and I doubt there's anyone from Dolphy listening to this. But if you are. Yeah, you're getting malware warnings on all web browsers, so you've got some issue with your site at the moment. So we won't be linking to those specific pages, unfortunately. Hopefully, that's fixed by next show.
Yes. So it's either something wrong with the website, or it's Comcast.
Yeah, or both, or it's Ubisoft. And the other thing on SWTOR front was there's been a bit of an announcement of the bugs that are going to be stomped on in patch 3.0.1, Simon.
Yeah, so I'd just be reading off a page at everyone who's, and you can probably just go and have a look at it yourself, because my dulcet tone's probably not the best communicator of vital information. But there do seem to be a few little teething problems, but nothing too bad, really. With any 0.0 release, you always are going to expect there to be a few hitches. So PvP is going to be enabled in the landing area of Yavin, which is good if that floats your boat. Really bother me particularly. Bugged achievements, resetting on login and logout. Now that would definitely be a bit of a pisser.
Yeah.
If that happened to you, so that's a good thing. So 3.0.1 is going to be landing on the 16th, which that's just a Tuesday update.
Oh, it's just Tuesday's up. Yeah.
Yep. So that will be good. 16M dropping half the token loot it should response would be a pre... I have no idea what that means. So moving on. And then they've listed a few bugs that will probably be fixed in 3.0.2. No credit for defeating Torch. So, oh, yes, Torch is a Mandalorian, I think, on Rishi.
Okay.
That's part of the story quest chain. The bug tank stances are lowering damage dealt by 20% instead of the listed 10%. Well, that's interesting. And level 60 group finder does not include level 55 hard and tactical flashpoints.
Yeah, I would have thought that's a slight issue.
That's a bit of a problem.
Mm.
So, yeah, so they're on the list of things to do. So those particular issues might be fixed with 3.0.1, but I can't see them them landing too late. We might even see a 3.0.1A or something like that. I would hope so, especially with the group finder acting up. You definitely don't want that at this point, because there's a lot of people who are already going to be at 60 and trawling around for armor sets.
That's right.
So that's just gonna piss everyone off.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, that's the only way. I mean, sad as it is, that's the only reason I do flashpoints, and that is via that function. So if you hit 60, and yeah, that's going to be damn annoying.
Yeah, and I've really got to start doing more flashpoints, because I am so horrendously undergeared. But that's partly because of my fixation with just wanting to wear what I want to wear, rather than what's the best stats. So I'm just forever trawling around looking for mods and, you know, sort of augmenting my armor and whatnot. And it's not a good way to go, but I'm just bloody minded that way.
So you're the opposite to me. I take notice of what gear, when I pick it up, that it not matches cosmetically, but it's the right spec, but I never mod anything. Even though I'm fully aware of how much of a difference that makes. So we're both as piss weak as each other.
Yes, perhaps we need to meet in the middle somewhere, although that's not going to happen.
No, bugger that. All right, so that's it as far as SWTOR news. And then for the end of the year, I'm very pleased that, you know, who needs Santa or Christmas when you've got ODS-1, and he's got right into the spirit of things and has done his latest Your Lore is Stuck in My Canon segment on Life Day. So, and I just want to say to you, ODS-1, you're an inspiration to me, and it's been a great year working with you, and I can't wait to see more of you in 2015, you wonderful person, you. Over you, ODS-1.
Thank you, Master David. May I say, your unflinching acceptance this year of my many critiques of you demonstrate that you do at least have some understanding of how right I am, and it is without doubt your greatest attribute. Today, we are going to examine a holiday more popular than Kwanzaa, more misunderstood than Christmas, and more fun than Festivus. Granted, that's probably not saying much, but it's all I've got. To do this, we must journey to a time of mystery and antiquity. The 1970s. Now, you may be asking yourself, why am I not talking about Life Day in the context of canon? And that is for two reasons. One, while Life Day is technically canon, its point of origin is not, even though a number of other canon subjects come from the same place. Second, there's not really a lot to say about Life Day, and I needed to pad the segment out a little. The history of this holiday appears to stretch back as far as 1,500,000 BBY, and was originally held every third year, but at some point it became an annual celebration. Traditionally, Wookiees play tree drum music, which is exactly what it sounds like. The core commemoration of the festival is to celebrate the renewal of life on Kashyyyk. As part of the ceremony, Wookiees participate in a spiritual passage to the Tree of Life by chewing on pieces of auger root. So Life Day is basically a bunch of furry monstrosities smashed out of their gourds. It was also a time to contemplate one's honour family, a Wookiee concept of family including blood relatives and those bound together by strong friendship, a time to remember those who had died and to celebrate with those still living. Life Day was also a time for enjoying oneself and all the best things life can offer. Trees were often trimmed and hung with decorations, gifts exchanged, and feasts held at night while the sky was lit with fireworks. Any similarity to any other festival is entirely coincidental and free from all copyright infringements. Apparently, singing was also an important part of Life Day, although here the information tends to get a little sketchy, so I won't assault your intellect with song titles that I suspect are dreadful puns, or your ears with what I'm certain is awful, awful music. And now to the rather more brutal version of the story. One that, without context, can only shock and confuse those who didn't grow up with broadcast television, fixed schedules, and the phenomenon known as the variety show. The origins of variety show extend back to British musical and its transatlantic offspring, vaudeville. Audiences were presented with a program of short musical numbers, acrobatics, magic, comedy, dance, even ventriloquists, for some reason. As technology advanced, the variety format was adapted for radio and then television, where it was massively popular, usually featuring established stars of the day with a cast of regulars and special guests. I could give you many examples, however, the mere mention of most of them is too horrible to contemplate, so I will simply present you with one you're probably familiar with, The Muppet Show. But as with all things, nothing lasts forever, and the variety show lost mass appeal sometime in the mid to late 80s. But its influence is still apparent in shows like Saturday Night Live and late-night talk shows with their musical numbers, interviews, and comedy segments. The Star Wars holiday special was very much a variety show to its core, in that it was a series of variety segments strung together with, in this case, a rather thin narrative. It's probably fair to say that most of the musical numbers haven't aged well. The comedy numbers most certainly haven't aged well, unless you understand or enjoy Honeymooners references, and I know I don't. Originally aired in the United States on November 17th, Live Day was originally an analogue for the Thanksgiving holiday. However, in other countries, it screened over the Christmas period, and that is the festival it is now most commonly associated with. For the time, the holiday special was a high-quality production, and generally well-received. The supporting cast were established well-known celebrities of the day, the sets were far more elaborate than for most such productions, as there was the possibility of a TV series following on, although that obviously never happened, as George Lucas was reported to be unhappy with the end result, despite him apparently being sent dailies throughout production. It is also noteworthy for a few other firsts, such as featuring the first appearance of the Wookiee homeworld, a representation which, I should mention, has endured since the original screening in 1978. It features the first appearance of Boba Fett in an animated segment produced by Nelvana, who interestingly later went on to make Star Wars droids and Star Wars Ewoks. It is also the first production I know of to feature a geriatric Wookiee enjoying an erotic fantasy in plain view of his family. In hindsight, the Star Wars holiday special is widely seen as quite awful, but I would suggest you don't judge it too harshly without first comparing it to contemporary productions such as the Donnie and Marie show, the Starlight Vocal Band show, or the Carpenters at Christmas. Speaking of things we should judge harshly, back to you, Master David.
Thanks, ODS1. I'd love you to, or no, actually, get stuffed. I've had it with you. I hope your Christmas is filled with, well, I hope they're not filled with Wookiee-ookies, which, Simon, I believe you have something to say on, that we can all make Wookiee-ookies for Christmas.
It's a link to Epicurus, who one of the many, or one of the better recipe websites, and unfortunately I've had to become a bit more familiar with the Star Wars holiday special recently. So if you don't know what a Wookiee Ookie is, or the even worse Hoth chocolate, recipes are available, but from what I can tell, the recipe for Wookiee Ookies, which are basically chocolate chip cookies with a hint of cinnamon, are actually very good. The reviews have indicated that they are delicious and quite chewy.
Well, I'm going to definitely go and try and bake them this week, and I'll let you know next show how they go. Actually, I shouldn't make that commitment. Simon, are you going to make them?
I might. The trouble with baking is I tend to eat the baking.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't exercise enough for eating baking. But it's Christmas. And,
that's right.
And they apparently are quite good, so.
Nice. Okay, that's everything Republic News, so let's jump straight now into general gaming news.
This is not the podcast you're looking for.
Is it the dawn of the PC console? Simon, is it?
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me, David.
Well, I can, if I quickly read the link that you kindly provided me.
No. When I was at PAX Oz, one of the things I had a look at was at the Alienware booth, and it's this this little teensy little computer called the Alienware Alpha. Now, as everyone's aware, well, most people who listen to this would be aware, Valve have announced Steam yes. OS. But like most Valve projects, it's going to be ready whenever the hell they feel yeah. like it. So whether SteamOS actually and the controller that keeps changing ever comes out before Half-Life
yeah,
3 or not, I don't
say
know.
That too. I thought they might launch them all together.
So Alienware, being the fun folks that they are, have decided to release a box that they designed to be a Steam box. But it, they've got a controller-friendly skin that sits over top. But it's basically it's a Windows 8.1 PC, and you can change pretty much anything. You can upgrade the RAM yourself. You can upgrade the processor so that you can get an i3, an i5, an i7.
That's cool.
And the only thing you can't upgrade is the GPU, but it is actually quite for what it is. It's pretty powerful. Certainly, it easily outperforms console, and it really is very small. It's about the size of a paperback book. Mm. If anyone knows what a paperback
yeah,
book
looks
is
like
anymore,
one of those small external hard drives you use for backups. It's
yeah, it's not much bigger than that. So it's very small. It's very discreet. It's quiet. Because I've had pressed my ear up against one, and it ticks along quite happily. So it quite happily will, and let's face it, it's designed for a television. So and unless you have got a 4K TV, and let's face it, most of us still don't, all this thing needs to do is be able to run well at 1080p, which is exactly what it does. So Shadows of Mordor run beautifully, and certainly it runs better than the console. And of course, the advantage with something like this is it's not compatible with Origin. It will only do your Steam games. But let's face it, most of us have probably got a fairly decent sized Steam library anyway, and the prices on Steam are so much cheaper than consoles anyhow, or even just buying a PC game at a retailer. So it's kind of perfect for that. So, yeah, like I say, small, discreet, plugs into your TV, runs well, comes with a 360 controller, although you can use an Xbox One controller. And being a PC, if Sony released the drivers, there's no reason why it wouldn't run with a DualShock. You can run a DualShock off or a DualShock 3 off the PC. So if Sony don't fanny about too much, then you should be able to play with whatever controller you want. And like I say, it's a lounge room computer. So you can plug a mouse and a keyboard into it, but unless you want to be sitting like a meter away from your 55-inch TV, really,
that's right. You're not
going to notice. Just get over yourself and pick up a controller, because most of these games can work quite happily with that. In fact, some of them are bloody optimized for it. Let's face it. That's definitely the case. So, yeah, it's going to be the first of many, I would think. I mean, Windows 8.1 is actually a pretty good gaming platform. And we may as well segue into one of the other things that we've got further down as to why this makes a difference. Because Windows 10 core components are going to be added to Xbox One in 2015, and Microsoft's big push at this point is to have basically one platform, one family. So the benefit of this, and if any PC gamers are probably switching off now, but don't, because the whole point of this is that the porting of games that are developed for consoles, and let's face it, that's where PC gamers get neglected awfully, and PC ports of what are usually developed as console games are very seldom optimized and can be quite crappy. We all know this. But being part of sort of an extension of the console family or part of the same family as a popular console means that the porting, and this is what the whole design of it, the porting from one to the other and back again,
it should be simple,
is going to be a lot more straightforward and a lot more optimized. Now, there's Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, is going to be giving a presentation January 21. So there's a lot more information, and it looks like some form of Xbox for Windows is going to pop up. Now, we know that wasn't very well supported last time, but it's quite possible that we might be looking at a brighter future for PC gaming because of this connection and, if you like, the consolification. Almost sounds like consolidation.
You should register as a domain name.
Probably should. But it looks like there could be some good news coming for PC gamers soon.
Yeah, that's that.
So, yeah, just keep your eyes open, but some good stuff could be happening next year.
Nice. Yeah, no, they're two interesting bits of news there. And the Alienware one, yeah, it's got to go that way. I think, you know, the PlayStation and, well, Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft thinking that they've got the console market cornered, I think they'd be delusional. There's just going to be more and more competitors, and PC's the obvious big one.
Well, yeah, ultimately, the problem with, obviously, with PCs or even Steam boxes, because there's different configurations, is it does make it slightly more difficult to, well, no, a lot more difficult to do the coding, because you can't optimize for one graphics card, you can't optimize for particular architecture. It has to cover everything, and that's where things get really bogged down. And that's the beauty of consoles. Even though they are underpowered PCs, again, they only have to be pushing pixels to a 1080p display.
That's right.
And it doesn't even have to be 1080p, because you can quite happily scrape by with at 900 or even 720. When things are moving, as long as the frame rate's not stuttering, as long as you're not getting tearing or jitters, then most people aren't going to notice once they're caught up in the game.
Exactly right.
So yeah, there's that. Yeah,
cool. Now, while we're still on consoles, two little bits of Destiny news. And as I mentioned before, I've been itching to play this again, particularly now the Dark Below's been released. Some players have been banned after using some modded consoles. So from memory, I don't think Bungie said how many, but there are some people I was using modded consoles. Now, what I don't understand, because I'm an idiot in these matters, Simon, is what advantages would they be getting out of the modded consoles as far as frame rates or things that just give them advantages in PvP? Or
No. Well, I don't know specifically in this case, but more often than not, it will be some sort of hack that increases your movement speed gives you additional ammo, or buffs your health, or just makes you invincible. There's any number of permutations, some more subtle and some not. So I'm not sure what they've done. I mean, I haven't modding consoles since the original Xbox, and I think the PS2, and people modding that so they didn't have to deal with buy genuine black CDs. They could just get the cheap and cheerfuls from the dodgy Asian stores.
Yeah.
I have no idea what sort of modding people are doing on an Xbox One or a PS4, but yeah, obviously, if you can, you will.
Yeah. No, so.
Well, some people will anyway.
Well, they're not playing anymore. And the other mini piece of Destiny news is The Dark Below, as I said, is out. And I love how Polygon, and I'll put the link in the show notes, have said, Destiny's first expansion, The Dark Below, has one sensational piece of content, the game's second-rate Crota's End. So, I mean, if you read it that way, they're saying, well, the rest of it's not that great, but at least there's a good second raid. And then it's an interesting video of a French player who goes in solo. I haven't watched it myself yet, but I will be tonight. So that's always interesting. I mean, it's still interesting. They're suffering under that. Well, it's not an illusion. It's a fact that the content's not there. And so I'll be fascinated. I think you're mentioning, Simon, I'll look for myself too, but it's around $39 for the expansion. I'm not even convinced I'm going to buy it because I'm not sure there's enough in it for me.
That's the expansion pass. So that's the one that's released, I think, in January, which is probably going to be as paper thin as this one was. Calling them expansions is disingenuous on the part of Bungie. It's DLC. It's not an expansion. They don't know what the word expansion means, apparently. Either that or they're just lying through their teeth like dirty little shits.
See, if it wasn't a Christmas episode, that'd be the episode name. The Dirty Little Shits episode.
Sorry, Dirty Little Shits, ho, ho, ho.
Well, see, I was planning on having something like I'm a Katy Cat in it, because remember, I did go to Katy Perry last night.
Oh, yes.
See? And I got to say, just to totally, and people, you know, 70% of our listenership will probably switch off now, but I went as a dad, as I tweeted today, I went as a dad duty and I came out a true fan. She's got everything as far as she can sing, she can dance. The stage show is honestly the best thing I've ever seen, and I've seen hundreds of shows. As far as an integrated, impressive technological feat with good singing and movement and band, I've never seen anything better.
Yeah, I don't know quite who. I mean, she's a teenage pop princess. There's no two ways that's what she's going for. But I can't deny that she's got talent. I did see a video on something that she'd done, just as a brief sideline, everyone. Don't panic.
The Katy cast. I wonder if there's a Katy cast
here. I'm sure there is. And this ain't going to be it. But I was quite impressed with her because she did a video where basically she turned up at different fans' venues as different characters. Sort of an obvious one like a clown, and then like a Jewish comedian or something, but several distinct characters, and she actually did a pretty good job of it. The girl's got talent. I will give you that. I'm not saying I like what she does, but I'm not going to deny people have ability, regardless of how I feel about their output.
That's right. No. So anyway, I promise I won't call it Katy Cat now. I'm thinking Dirty Little Shits, ho, 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 might be the way to go. Although iTunes tends to censor the shit, so I'll think of something.
Yeah, well, they accidentally said Papers, Please couldn't have any nudity. So they had to submit a nudity. They've gone back on that now. But I mean, considering how pixelated the graphics were, I can't see how nudity could possibly be an issue. But
I'll be over them. I don't know how Gail is such an Apple fan person she is. Right. Assassin's Creed 4 patch coming. Well, it's pretty much hit now, hasn't it, Simon?
Yes. Yes, that would definitely be the case. Everyone knows what problems Assassin's Creed's been having on all platforms, let's face it. So everyone's been treated equally here. Everyone's had a fresh, warm poo dropped on their head, regardless of what their choice is. And so this is going to end up patching, well, basically a ton of the bugs that they've had. And they've also released the details for eligibility on the free game that they've offered.
Oh, yeah.
So you get everyone who's bought the game and the expansion pass or the season pass, whatever they're calling their version of it, gets the expansion free. Which is nice. Mm. So there's no charge. Hang on. How does that work? If they've already bought the... Okay, I will provide the link because I've clearly misunderstood what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, there's another link there about how, I'll put both links in.
Yeah, they do get, what is it? Am I eligible to receive the Dead Kings DLC for free? Yes, anyone who purchases Assassin's Creed, it's just if you purchased the game, the buggy game, you get the DLC free.
That's nice.
And it's if you bought the season pass, then you are eligible for your free game, which could be The Crew, which just came out, Far Cry 4, which just came out, Watch Dogs, which didn't, but it's been out long enough that they've fixed any of the cracks in that. Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which most people would agree has been one of the best Assassin's Creed games ever. Rayman Legends and Just Dance 2015 for when you're drunk and have people over at Christmas. And hopefully don't have your PlayStation Eye turned on and streaming to Twitch because, saw that last year. Thank you.
Right. I'm just a bit disappointed. I mean, I think, they're trying to remedy the situation. I'm just disappointed they didn't offer a fireworks launcher in-game. A bit short-sighted, if you ask me.
I probably just would have fallen through the terrain anyway.
Nice. Call of Duty. I've heard it's got the best graphics of any game ever released ever, according to a regular listener of ours. So
there is a rumor,
I'd argue Secret World's better. So US retail sales are down 27% year on year. Now that's a hell of a drop.
It is. I think I'm just going to fold this into the item that follows as well. We all know that Call of Duty has been on a bit of a decline, and Call of Duty Ghosts wasn't terribly well received. Advanced Warfare has been well received. But the overall figures year on year are still dropping. So that's not necessarily a bad thing because everything peaks and really it's what you sustain after the drop off.
Yeah.
If it keeps declining, then you will have a problem. But if the sales settle down into some sort of a flatter angle, then not necessarily a bad situation, and the top 10 best-selling games of 2014 so far, and this is US unit sales, sold through as opposed to sold in, because we don't do that crap, and this is for all platforms. So sold through
means that a person has actually ended up with it? Yeah,
yep.
And it's in millions, I assume.
Yes. Sold in is when it stocks hit a retailer. Yeah. So as PlayStation has a tendency to quote its PlayStation 4 sales figures as sold throughs. Xbox, until recently, has been quoting the figures as sold ins. So, should we count up or count down?
Your call. I'd start from the bottom and work up.
Yeah. Some of the numbers seem to have vanished for some reason.
All right. We'll start from 9. So, you're right. A few of them are gone.
Don't know where they went. Never mind. But the number 10 was NBA 2K15.
Okay, yeah.
Sort of seems a bit pointless having 2K15, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's just dumb. But anyway, basketball game, cool.
Yeah. Titanfall, that had 2 million. Super Smash Brothers got 2.1. Call of Duty Ghost 2.4. Watch Dogs 2.5. Minecraft is selling well, 2.7. Madden NFL 15, 2.9. GTA 5, 3.3. And that's including the where we are so far with the next January release. Destiny got 3.8. And Call of Duty Advanced Warfare 5.8.
So it's still number one,
Yeah, even though it's dropping, they've got an awful height to actually glide down from. So they're not plummeting, clearly. There's a pretty decent glide path going on. So, it's declining, but still doing better than most of the other kids on the block.
Yeah, gotcha. And see, I'm surprised Destiny came in at number 2, but it did better than I thought.
Yeah, well, the real proof of the pudding with Destiny is going
longevity.
To be... Yeah, longevity. How long is this going to last? Because... Even if I had the $40, there's no way I'd get the expansion for the Xbox One because It's missing one of the strikes.
That's right.
Which is one of the. It's a big chunk of content. So
well,
yeah.
While we're jumping all over the place, it probably segues nicely into the issue of the PlayStation and its free games. So for those, I think we mentioned it before that if you own a PS4 or 3, you can pay. It's roughly $70 a year for PlayStation Plus, and every month you get to download. If you're on a PS4, it's usually 2 games each month. And there's some real questions being asked on whether it's worth it or not. So, and I'll put a link to the article on Polygon. But just from my pure, my perspective, I'm not convinced it is worth it. So I've downloaded 6 games now, and I can honestly say 5 of them I've played 2 or 3 minutes of and gone, yep, that was fine, and that's all I'll be doing. And then there's one, and I hate the fact I can't remember what it is. There's one that I have played quite a bit. But if I'd bought it on Steam, I would have happily paid, say, $10 for it. So unless, you know, in the next... I've only been 3-month subscriber. Unless in the next 9 months I have another 6 games like that, I'm not even close to getting my money's worth. What's your take, Simon?
Yeah, you raise a good point. The tricky part with this is, yes, you get games and just adding it all up in with a dollar value, their average Metacritic score and their cumulative buckage does make it look worthwhile. But if it's not a game you want,
that's right.
Then it's there's really no dollar value there at all, because you never would have paid for it. That is, at this point, that is still one of the benefits of having a last-gen machine as well, because you're still getting some pretty substantial through flow of games. And you have to bear in mind as well that although there's a lot of indie games being developed for things like the PlayStation 4, there's not a lot of first and third party games at the moment, and the ones that have come out have been a bit erratic. Obviously, Drive Club, which was supposed to be a launch title, and has sort of stalled out of over the start line at this point, and still seems to be kind of chugging its way in second down the straight. That's not exactly been a winner. Really, the Xbox has got a stronger lineup of games coming into the new year. So, yeah, what they're going to be able to give you just for the PlayStation 4 is going to be a bit more restricted. But if you have the PlayStation 3, then you get games like Don't Starve, Bioshock Infinite, Devil May Cry, Brothers of Tale of Two Sons. That's a lovely little game. What else did they... Because I've still got the old PS3, and, I think I should be playing some Bioshock Infinite. But that's the thing about the old platform, is most people have gotten rid of it, but if you have any kind of a backlog or games that you wanted to play but never quite got around to, never bought, then it's kind of perfect, because they've got a massive back catalog of titles to go through, and you know, there's some damn good stuff to be had. So yeah, and of course if you've got something like Vita, for those of you who don't know, the Vita is like the handheld console, which are just on hardware specs, or not on titles, but hardware alone, the Vita's better than the DS, although the DS clearly has got a far bigger library to choose from. So yes, it really does come down to what you got and how much you can take advantage of this, David.
Yeah, I'm not there, mate. The only other thing, even though I disagree with the fact that you have to buy the PS Plus to do it, the only other advantage is, because I do play Destiny, is it allows me to, I can't remember what it does, is it the find a group?
The multiplayer.
Yeah,
the
multiplayer stuff. Yeah. So you get access to that, which I'd argue should be in the game anyway. But if I need to rationalise the cost, that's one advantage of it.
Yeah, but that's the funny thing. With PlayStation Plus and Xbox Gold, one used to be way worse. Like, you had to have Gold to be able to use Netflix, which is, you know, it's a subscriber service
anyway,
as well. or to use Internet Explorer or Skype or anything. Everything was locked behind a paywall. Yeah. That's changed, and they're giving away games now, and some pretty reasonable ones too. PlayStation Plus used to be free. Mm. No, PlayStation Multiplayer used to be free, and Plus was basically just a way of you get the games and a few other little benefits. So they've kind of met in the middle where they're, I wouldn't say they're equal, but they're definitely gotten a hell of a lot closer to each other.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that was a bit of a meaty general gaming section, if I do say so myself. Although, credit to you, Simon, you came up with most of it. Pop culture. Let's jump straight into that.
I can feel your anger growing.
Last episode, we did a little bit of a dissection of the Star Wars Episode 7 original trailer. And I know we both mentioned the ball droid. And it turns out that there's been some clarification that it's not CGI. It's actually a practical effect they've achieved with that.
Yeah, it's a story from Polygon. And they were reporting on something that Mark Hamill was actually telling folks. The ball droid is a practical effect. Not only is it a practical effect, it was something that the special effects guys actually let some of the cast members drive around.
Okay.
Gave them the remote control and they could, yep, go for it.
BB-8 is the name of the droid. It's, BB-8.
BB, like basketball?
What would we have done if they'd called one of these bloody droids ADS-1? Now that would have look, Simon and David, professional podcasters off the back of suing Disney.
I think we'd have to register.
Yeah, that might have helped.
Yeah, remember Disney are the company that used to go around suing schools for having badly rendered versions of Mickey Mouse and Goofy on the side of gyms and bike sheds. So, I don't like our chances.
But so, it's a live prop.
Yep, live prop and something that even an actor can operate, which says something for it. So, I have to backpedal a little bit on the scorn I poured on it, because I couldn't see how something like that would be useful or a good idea. But the fact that it's actually a functional physical object, I have to. Yeah, definitely.
And Mark Hamill, I mean, he's quoted saying, and not having thought that I'd ever go back there, to go back into that world is just, I get the chills. It's just so much fun. Now, that's fairly high praise from a guy that's had an extensive acting career outside of Star Wars.
Yes, and in its own way, a very successful one.
Yes. So, good on you, Mark. I got to be honest with the movie. I'm most excited to see those old characters and what they do with them. That's the number one hook for me.
I'm saving my excitement for, and it, again, it's still cautious excitement, but I'm saving my excitement for the Deadpool movie.
Oh, yeah. That'll be cool.
And possibly a homicidal rage, depending on how that goes.
Well, that sounds a bit like, we won't talk about too much this episode, but apparently there has been a little bit of footage released at BlizzCon for the World of Warcraft movie, which I had missed until I was listening to the Instance podcast today, so I'll chase that up. Because it's another one that could be really, really good or so tragic it's not funny.
Yeah, it's so difficult to... I don't know how any of these things can sometimes not be a disappointment. I think it's one of the great benefits that Guardians of the Galaxy had. It was the characters only, let's say the minority of people were aware of. So there's no expectations. And for most people, it's just a pleasant surprise because they had no idea what the hell was going on. It's a talking, barely talking tree, bad tempered rodent. And the guy that did the voice of the guy from the Lego movie.
That's right.
So
now, and I'm disgusted with myself that I haven't actually watched Guardians of the Galaxy yet. And I plan on doing that this Christmas break, which is a beautiful segue into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And there's some news this week that Marvel Studios and Sony have been in discussions about bringing Spider-Man back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, those original talks, I don't think, have been fruitful, but there's predictions that the dialogue, you know, there will be further discussions and that, you know, Spider-Man could end up, for example, with the Avengers. Now, there's not a lot to criticise about this. I'd love to see it. I think it's just plain wrong from a lore or, you know, he just should be there. And it's a pain in the ass he's not. So I just cannot see any downsides, particularly given Sony have had a bit of a mixed record in how they've... I mean, the Spider-Man movies, yeah, they're a mixed bag, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. They really are. There's so many things you can... There's things you can admire and things you can just absolutely eviscerate. Yeah. As far as both the original... Raimi versions and then the relaunch. They've got both got strengths, both got weaknesses.
And so again, I haven't watched the relaunch. I've seen all the Raimi ones, and I haven't watched any of the last three, isn't it? Two. Yeah.
It's when I heard that they were thinking of doing a Aunt May movie. That I'm thinking, no, Sony, you're struggling financially. You're in the hole. It's only your gaming division that's making any money at all. Everything else is just a steaming pile of. Oh, yeah, you know where I'm going with that. The company's in a very bad state. They should probably consider selling back some of their licensing.
That's right, and this would be an obvious. And
let's face it, Marvel. Marvel have got the money to buy it back.
Yeah, gotcha. So,
and Andrew Garfield. Well, no, he probably won't make the transition.
No,
I mean there's all sorts of contracts and whatnot. Unless they buy everything as a job lot, and I can't see that happening. Yeah, it's hard to say where it's going to go, but yeah, Spidey needs to be back in the Avengers at some point.
I mean, it just. As much as I like Hawkeye and the Black Widow in the Avengers movie, it just makes zero sense that they're in there, you know, fighting these massive fights and Spider-Man's nowhere to be seen. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, but, I mean, you could argue the same about Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, true. No, absolutely.
But that's the thing about the Avengers. It's just had a pretty flexible and...
Roster, yeah.
Organic roster, yeah. So, you don't have to have any or all of these characters in at any one time.
No, that's right. But I think
so. But Spidey does, as you say, Spidey needs to be in there at some point.
Three for Spider-Man. Let's hope. That's a small glimmer on the horizon. And then Penny Arcade. Oh, sorry. While we're on Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has just had its second mid-season finale, and I say I'm a rabid Marvel fan, but here's yet another thing. I have not watched a single episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because from a couple of reviews, it got a mixed review the first couple, and I just never got around to watching it.
Yeah, I've had to explain this to a few people, and most people's assessment is based on the first half dozen, first eight shows, where it seemed a bit like a procedural in that that something happens, you go out, you fix the problem, run into trouble, have an inspiration, and you know, it just seemed to be kind of, okay, well, yeah, so you could play these pretty much out of order and it would still make sense. And then things changed. And that's the thing. I'm saying this, it's bit of a spoiler, but let's face it, if you've seen The Winter Soldier, you know that S.H.I.E.L.D. has some personnel issues. Let's just say that. Now, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., obviously that's going to affect the TV show because they exist in the same universe. And that's where things start getting interesting, and characters which I have to admit I thought were kind of dull and a bit pedestrian. That's when you start seeing a bit more depth, a bit more interest, and start losing your expectations about where things are going to go and how people how the character you thought you knew is going to react and whether it's a bluff, double bluff. There's a lot more going on. And now, and I'm not going to say too much for people that haven't seen it or maybe are thinking about watching it, especially over the summer hiatus where basically everything shuts down as far as American TV shows go, where the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. sort of seem to be waiting for the revelations in Winter Soldier. It now there's a bit more leading going on with the TV show about and foreshadowing about what might be coming up in the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, there's good shows, there's bad shows, but the roster of characters changes. The roster of characters goes through arcs, some of them not particularly nice ones. So, yeah, if you've got nothing better to watch or you've thought about having a look, give it a go, because you'll definitely find it starts getting a lot more interesting as the first season goes on.
Good.
And it's a bit like the 100 as well. If you've never seen the 100 or never really bothered about it, it seems like a bit of another CW teen drama. But that, as it's gone into its towards the end of its first season and definitely the second season, it's gotten a lot. Well, it's been a bit surprising in places. Like any of these sort of shows, they can be a bit uneven, and you just have to forgive that. But overall, I think they're both strong shows in different ways. Okay. And they have decent characterizations, and you can't say that for a lot of television.
I'm still recovering from the mid-season finale of The Walking Dead, but that's just me. Yet another death. There's a surprise.
Damn those zombies.
Damn those zombies. Just while I've thought of it, you're talking about comics too, that I was reading during the week that the new Star Wars comic that Marvel are releasing, and I'm sorry, I can't remember when, but I think it's early in the new year, is going to be one of the biggest selling comics of all time, not surprisingly. So a bit of pressure there.
Good they're not building it up.
Yeah, I know. A bit of pressure there for a 21-page comic. And then the other comic thing is Penny Arcade, talking about online comics. And Simon, you've got a great link here, and you quite rightly allege that Bungie should be hiring this webcomics writer on their team. Because, yeah, I've just had a read through it before the show, and you're right, it's better than most of the dialogue in the game at the moment.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, we'll include a link, but it doesn't actually provide you with... Well, it doesn't provide you with any more information than you actually really get in the game. What it does give you is...
Substance. There's meat. There's meat to it.
There is meat to it. There's depth to it. And it's... There's not a lot to it, but there's something that the last bit just kind of hits you.
Yeah, and they've got... I mean, whoever's doing it's got that real comic book pacing too. They've done well with it. It's really good.
Yeah, nice panel layout.
Yes. I like it. I'll be following that one.
Go and have a look at that.
Yep, that'll be yet another link to the show notes. And I think that'll do us for pop culture, Simon. So we will now jump into the last bit of the week, which is Tech Roundup.
It does have its moments. Not many, but it has them.
First thing, Simon and I are both well-known fans of the Oculus Rift, although I'm getting pretty impatient with it, that news this week or in the past fortnight that thanks to Facebook investment, Oculus can now themselves buy other companies, which makes sense, and that some of these sound very interesting, Simon.
Yep. Well, and this is sort of obvious, I suppose, but also kind of a relief that they've done it. They've purchased a company called Nimble VR, which is a recent startup. And what they do is it's hand tracking, basically. So not only position depth as well as your left, right, up and down and all the rest of it. So that starts to get kind of interesting. So you'd have gesture recognition built into that. But also, obviously, if it's any good, it means you're not going to get the tactile feedback.
No, that's right.
Unless there's some sort of gloves with some kind of force feedback framework, That could work. I'm getting ahead of myself here. But that's the next company they can buy, someone who does that. But theoretically, there's no reason why, apart from the lack of haptic feedback, you could actually reach out and interact with things and have your virtual hands doing that without the current ludicrous setup you have with multiple cameras.
Yeah. I mean, what I find interesting about this article, and I'll be totally transparent, I was only reading it just as you were talking, is the Nimble VR I've not heard of. Now, some listeners might know I'm doing some post-grad study in this area and are very aware of the Leap Motion, which has just had version 2, when I say just in the last 3 or 4 months, had version 2 of the dev kit come out, and it's absolutely amazing. So now I'm dying to compare Nimble VR versus it, because the Leap Motion is designed by the Leap Motion guys to work fairly well with the Oculus Rift as well. So it, and that's going to be interesting at a wider level, just which one of them gets the Guernsey, and or whether they both are successful and you end up having to choose which one you use.
Yeah, well, that may well be the case.
Yeah,
it may be an ecosystem,
that's right,
rather than having everything nailed down.
Both, you're right, the haptic feedback is something that fascinates me, because even in my initial build, so mine's to do with using this stuff to help health professional students learn key clinical skills. The haptic feedback I can see is going to be pretty critical. So that's the next part of the puzzle that needs to be easily sorted. But yeah, that sounds promising. I mean, the Leap Motion's a couple of $100 max. The Oculus Rift, they're saying, will be probably twice that. So I mean, for well under $1,000, even with haptic stuff built in, you can have a full VR setup, which is just bloody amazing.
Yeah, and the other company they bought was 13th Lab, which is seems to be concerned with augmented reality.
And constructing, and 3D construction.
Real-time 3D frameworks, so basically creating a 3D map of your environment so things can get overlaid onto it, which you'd think would there'd be some pretty sophisticated and powerful stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
Having to do that, I mean, doing it real time, that's, I don't know how good these guys are, but they've clearly got something going for them.
Yeah.
But you combine real time 3D environmental framework construction along with the my mind's just gone blank, the hand tracking, but that's a couple of pretty substantial opponents right there.
That's right.
I mean, I'm not really that bothered in augmented reality. I prefer just to completely shutter myself away from reality, period. just give me virtual reality, baby. That's all I'm interested in. Preferably as Deadpool, but that's another issue completely. But still interesting.
Oh, it's exciting
and
stuff.
It just gives you really a pretty strong lead as to why Lucky was happy enough to start drinking from the chalice of the Facebook.
Yeah, well, it looks like it's going to pay off.
What they're going to do with that additional funding?
Absolutely.
And
for those of you, and I doubt there is, but if there's many people listening doubting the whole validity of this as far as what really extra does it bring, I mean, even with the little bit I'm doing with my study, the ability to walk up to a virtual light switch and switch it on like you normally would, it's just mind-blowing. But anyway, I won't do.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that I think people have to appreciate, but having real-time feedback in an artificial environment that really is going to start pulling you in.
And the fourth piece of the puzzle is movement. So I know there's the Omni, which I need to find out how they're going, which was the little cagey thing you stood in and you could walk along with the special shoes. But the movement is the other key one, as far as foot movement, like moving in space and time in the virtual reality environment.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether we end up with like some sort of head-mounted, effectively a mocap system that basically just translates you and a bunch of other a bunch of other people into a virtual environment, or whether it does become more of an augmented reality.
Yeah.
And I always remember a series of books written by the author Tad Williams.
Oh, yeah.
You should all go and Google him right now. But there was he did a very good series which basically dealt with well, I won't go into it exactly what it dealt with, but it did deal with a virtual reality. Well, he has some. I prefer people just find out for themselves, but the way he had it was, rather than, you know, just the Matrix where you're plugging some abomination into the back of your head, you basically wore a helmet and suit, and then you got into like a full immersion tank.
Oh, okay.
With a viscous liquid that basically supported your body, and you gained feedback. So it really was full immersion, literally.
So it's a bit Avatar like.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's if we can get to the point where the Matrix is obviously the extension of that, where you basically do not need the body anymore because all of the stimuli is being provided through the device, through the interface, as opposed to having to fool your body into thinking it's going through what one, maybe two of your other senses say is going on. Because obviously, if you have that kind of a discontinuity between what your eyes say is happening and what your ears, your sense of balance is saying is happening,
right.
That's what makes people nauseous.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the disconnect. So, yes, it's all very interesting. We are Stone Age people throwing rocks at black monoliths
that's
at this
right.
point. But
I bet you the Katie cast don't talk about this stuff. And finally, to finish Tech Roundup, leaked emails, Simon, from Sony. We're a bit hating on Sony this week, but legitimately so.
Well, no, this isn't about Sony specifically. It's just something that came up. We know that Sony recently got hacked.
Yeah.
Really, not the PlayStation Network, but Sony's actual internal computer system. And someone did an Edward Snowden, basically, you know, whether it was North Korea or who the hell knows. But a lot of this stuff ended up on the internet. And people have been digging through it, including The Verge, who I definitely am not a group of people I would want sifting through my trash because they're too damn smart.
Yeah.
What they've found out is, and there's quite a bit of information, it's an evolving story without a doubt. But it appears that the MPAA, that's the Motion Picture Association of America, and the major movie studios have been getting themselves sorted out, along with a lot of district attorneys, who start going after Google. And that's, bear in mind that Comcast owns Universal.
Yeah.
And Comcast is one of the two big providers, obviously, Time Warner being the other one, that wants to start, or would like, because they can't figure out any other way of milking money out of their customers, would like to start having fast lanes and regular lanes, if you want to put it that way, as far as internet traffic goes, which obviously would start impacting YouTube and a Google property and Netflix, along with a bunch of others. And then you end up with a tiered and stratified and so forth. So anything that Comcast at Universal is involved in would immediately starts making me see conspiracies. And like I say, it's an emerging story, but I would I'd suggest we'll can we put this link up
as
well?
Yeah, absolutely.
But just have a look and see what the MPAA and Universal, Sony, Fox, Paramount, Warner Brothers, and Disney have been plotting with their extremely expensive lawyers, and just what it might possibly mean for us in the future, because SOPA may just have been someone enthusiastically firing off before the main
battle begins. I mean, if you're a TLDR sort of person, you're not going to want to read this, but it's a fascinating read just from what I've looked at, so...
Yeah, and The Verge isn't the only one who's been going after that, but they're just one of the first people who started exploring the story. So keep your eye on this one, folks, because we might have another SOPA, and this one could
get a lot nastier.
Nastier.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's all very well. A lot of people managed to get up in arms about SOPA and the similar things that have bounced around, but you know, it's sometimes unless you can really get the base agitated. Oh, we've been through that before. We stopped it. Blah, 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 blah. And it's difficult to get them motivated.
That's
again.
That's right.
And how many times can we get people to stand up against this sort of thing before people start just getting kind of bored and disinterested?
Yeah,
the studios and the MPAA and Comcast and Time Warner just wear us down. Bearing in mind, obviously, that Comcast own Universal, one of the six studios, and Warner Brothers is one of the other six. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's the internet providers have got a pretty big stake in this.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they're not nice people. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah. And, I mean, in related news is Pirate Bay is had a raid last week by the Swedish police and has been down for a number of days now.
Yes, Easy TV is still down as well. So, yeah, that's... Pirate Bay's been stable for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But, well, a very long time. So this is... they obviously managed to rip over... Because they took a bunch of servers, the Swedish police, and they've obviously managed to kick a pretty big hole...
Yes, in everything.
TPB's infrastructure and a number of other sites
what's funny is that it's happened after all the mid-season finales. You've got to wonder whether that was intentional or not.
Yeah, and they haven't stopped everything because there's other torrent sites that have just seen a big uptick in traffic.
Yeah, so there you go.
Because everyone's going somewhere else.
Okay. I'm going to call that a show, Simon. What do you say?
Well, my throat's hurting, so I think you should.
Good. I'm not good that it's... Your throat's hurting.
Too late now.
Too late.
Bastard.
Yeah, so we're done, I think. And so as always, and we do love an opinion suggestion or some general abuse, and we do get that most episodes on Twitter, and we appreciate the wonderful guys and girls that do that after each show. And so, sorry, you got to back up, folks, only a week after the last one. But otherwise, please don't hesitate to email us a question, query. We'd love a question. What would we do if we're asked a question again, Simon? We'd try and answer it, I suppose.
Maybe.
Yeah. So if you do, you know, make our year and email us at contact@oceanicgamer.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheOceanicGamer. I did have an email the other week, Simon, or the other day from... a guy asking if he could buy advertising on the site. And I initially went, well, yeah, okay, because it all helps fund the podcast. But it turned out it was a dodgy site and he can't understand why I won't let him put links to his page rank zeroed WoW Gold site. So you can also follow us on Twitter. My handle is TheOceanicGamer and Simon tweets... under RPG Beats RL. As you know, the last 50 episodes of the show are on iTunes and we're also on the wonderful Stitcher service. But yeah, thanks very much for listening. As I said, we'll be back in mid-January, so try and survive a month without us. And thank you, Simon, for this year and the year before that. It's always a bloody pleasure. It's a highlight of my fortnight. I don't expect it to be a highlight of yours, though.
I don't even remember the shows as soon as we finish them.
Yeah, see, I don't... Yeah, well, I edit them and then, yeah. It's... No, I'm on a high once I got the bastard out. So...
Oh, yeah. No, I feel like that as soon as I managed to pry one of the lore segments out of ODS1's cold, dead hands.
Yeah, and they are appreciated and popular as well. So, yeah, thank you, sir. And, we'll be back in mid-January after... much Christmas exercise and laying off the food, am I right?
And putting things on eBay, yes.
So now, is there anything you'd like to mention about eBay? So are you selling, I believe, a birdie tells me that you might be selling some Star Wars memorabilia on eBay.
Well, I don't know about memorabilia, but if anyone wants a 5-binder set of the official Star Wars fact files, let me know.
Yeah, send Simon a tweet or even contact me via the email contact@oceanicgamer.com and I'll pass it on. I actually do want them, but I know I would be killed in my household if I tried to find room for those, let alone the postage.
Yeah, they are heavy. There's a lot of paper.
Yeah, but
a lot of paper.
I still say, yeah, if you're after a treasure.
So the Star Wars Tazos are much lighter and will be much cheaper to post.
Sorry, I've just got the man, but that's funny as. I wonder how much an original small miniature die-cast Millennium Falcon's worth now. I've still got that. I'm looking at it right now.
I think the main problem with most memorabilia produced in Star Wars is there's just so much of the shit.
Well, this is the original stuff.
Well, original stuff, if it's still in its packaging.
Nah, that's the trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a couple of dozen Star Wars figures in the Millennium Falcon. That's about it.
Stuff is worth what someone's willing to pay when you're selling it. Everything else is just pointless conjecture.
That's right. So, yeah, jump on eBay if you're still silly enough to be listening now. have a great Christmas break and New Year.
Happy Life Day,
Happy
everyone.
Happy Life Day. Get some Wookiee cookies into you. And, remember, if your pug wipes, it's probably because one of us was in it or it's the SWTOR group finder that stuffed you over. Bye.
Bye.
Who's the more foolish? The podcast or the person that listens to it?